Okay, it is 2:01 and I'm going to call the workshop meeting to order. And this is a workshop regarding the Cape Mears Loop Engineering and it will be a briefing. So, Leanne.
Mr. Chair, if I could, I might just say for the public's benefit, the reason that this is being videotaped today, this is an important issue to a lot of the citizens in the county. And of course, not everybody can be here today because of work schedules and all that. So the board has asked Jane Scott to videotape this today. And so it'll be playing on our cable access channel. So anybody from the public that wants to watch it and knows, get the facts on what's going on. So that's the reason it's being videotaped.
Hey, Leanne.
Good afternoon, Leanne Welch, your Public Works Director. So as far as the agenda, I didn't print one out for you, but I'm going to do introductions of my team. Then I'm going to give a little couple opening statements. I'll turn it over to the county surveyor, and then I'll turn it over to my engineering team. We'll talk if you want discussion, and if you want to have some public comment at that time, I think that, does that work for you?
Sure.
Okay, so I'd like to introduce my team. Jeanette Steinbach will be in the back taking notes. You have the county surveyor, elected official, Dan McNutt, deputy surveyor, Joe Jensen. They've been doing all the survey data. And then my consultant team, project manager is Ian McCann with OTAC Consulting Engineers. Grant Ebenhus from OTAC, he's a roadway engineer, and Chris Carpenter is our geotechnical engineer from Cordforth Consultants. So at my recommendation, the board of county commissioners, maybe it wasn't three of you, in January 17th, 2013, we closed Cape Mears Loop as a result of significant movement up there. So I'm just gonna give you some background here, and I hope that hopefully you can see all this. So here's the bay, here's the ocean, Cape Mears, Oceanside, Neatarts is down here. So when we close this road, this is Bay Ocean that goes out to Cape Mears. We probably get 5 or 6 landslides a year on there, annually depending on the weather. They're generally short term, we pick them up within generally a few hours unless power lines are involved. But this road can be pretty much closed for hours at a time. Then, so what we've done is I've done emergency planning with the leadership of Gordon McCraw and emergency responders here at Tillamook County. Gordon will call and says, okay, we got a winter storm coming. We take, Public Works takes a backhoe, sets it at Memelose boat ramp so that we can respond to this and get this road open. Because this is closed because Cape Mears becomes very isolated. We've also worked with Stimson Lumber and we have an emergency access route. It's about 7 miles. That goes from Highway 131 all the way to Cape Mears. So we do have an emergency route that we have signed. So if there's an medical emergency in Cape Mears, while this is closed and Cape Mears is closed, we do have an emergency route. Then in 2011, Happy Camp, this is Neatarts, Oceanside, Happy Camp had a slide in 2011 and it closed the road for about, I don't know, five or six months. Mm-hmm. And so the residents of Oceanside actually used the Cape Mears Loop as part of the way that they got in and out because they couldn't get out the other way. So everybody used Cape Mears Loop. So as we've now closed this, that route is not available to Oceanside if something happens down here at the Happy Camp area. Now I've had recent discussions with ODOT and they say that they're monitoring this and this is relatively stable right now. But we all know that the geology that we have here in the North Oregon coast is tenuous depending on the weather of what happens. So that's also a concern that we have. So in Federal Highways had approved, so this big slide where we've had a lot of movement happened during a federally declared storm event. So Federal Highways, because it's on part of the Federal Highway system, has paid $250,000 for us to do a geotechnical study and alternative analysis, and you've just met my consultant team who has been leading that effort. Oregon Department of Transportation administers Federal Highway money to local organizations. So it's certainly bureaucracy that we have, but it's local, state, and federal government working together. So, and then of course we have the County Surveyor's Office doing some survey points. So that's just an initial kind of a lay of the land that we have right now. So with that, I guess, are there any questions before I turn it over to the County Surveyors to go ahead and give a presentation on what they have observed the last couple years? Danny and Joe?
Good afternoon. I'm Dan McNutt, I'm a county surveyor. We've been up there on Cape Mears Loop doing some observations on some points that we had set back in 2007 when the county took over a bypass where the worst part of the slide is. And we went up there and...
My name is Joe Jensen, Tillamook County Deputy Surveyor, County Surveyor. I'd like to welcome everybody here. We were up there in 2007 to monument the center line of that newly paved asphalt section that you probably all recognize up there. And it looked great, and so at that point in time, Dan had a little foresight. He said, since we have the GPS technology, why don't we go ahead and get some GPS positions on those center line monuments? And fortunately, we did. And they have now been our benchmark measurements for measuring the movement of that center line over the last 7 years. So what I have here, it's a diagram. Excuse me. I'll go ahead and show this to the county commissioners first. What we have here is a diagram of the road right-of-way, and you'll notice that here is the center line. We have a center line position. These monuments that we tied in, are ones that are on the line, are the monuments that we tied in 2007 using GPS technology. The monuments now are these monuments here. And they all represent about an average of about 13 to 14 feet movement towards the ocean. You'll notice that we've got those here. You can see the center line. That's where we put our monuments in 2007. Subsequent monitoring has shown that these have now moved downhill about 14 feet. I could pass this around so that you can actually get a good look at it. The line in the middle of this drawing has center line CL, which is the center line that was monumented in 2007. And the black dots off to downhill are those that we have continued to monitor over the 7 years. So, go ahead and pass that around. Could I start it back here? Well,
so question, Joe.
Yeah.
Maybe for Leanne too. The old road that's down the hill. How far further down the hill is that? In other words, how far?
That road, what you're looking at on the screen. We haven't turned the lights off yet because they're going to have a PowerPoint. That road has moved 90 feet outside of its right of way, and that's why we realigned the road. So that road had moved 90 feet.
So we have a history of continuing movement over time.
And Chris is going to present some of the background and history of the slides that goes back to the 1800s.
Okay, thank you.
On the drawing that you just saw, there's a drawing, a point that was set by George Urie of Public Works. That it's out in the old asphalt or the old oil pavement portion of the road. If you go up there and you look past it, you see all this gravel that's falling down on the old road. Just on the other side of that, there's this portion that's kind of paved. I guess you can call it paved. Well, we have a point over there that we're monitoring. And on that drawing, we show the old center line of that old road. And you'll notice that point number that we have continued to monitor has moved consistently in just about the same direction as all the other points. Probably, I'd have to look, 10 feet. So everything's shifting. Everything's moving. These here are just a representation of some of the points and how much they've moved. The green represents measurements from 2007 to 2012 on this drawing. This is the overall movement. You can see that in some places you've got 15 and a half feet of overall movement of that center line just shifted.
In the last 7 years.
Yeah, yes, just in the last 7 years.
So in 7 years, you're looking at 14 to 15 feet in some of those places, where the whole center line, it's consistent in its movement. All those points are basically moving in the same direction at the same speed.
So along the road, how wide is that section that's moving? Not much of the road.
Well, gosh.
Our section is about 700 feet. But it goes all the way. They're going to show you where they bored down the road towards the lighthouse. So they'll be able, you'll be able to get a better feel for how long that stretch is. But it's been an interesting process. The actual decision to put a GPS coordinate on that was very providential, I guess, because it allowed for us to continue that measurement. And let me think, see if, does anybody have any questions? Anymore? I'm trying to make sure I've covered everything.
And if not, there'll be an opportunity for interaction.
Oh, one more thing. As you're driving up from the north, or you're headed south, and you get just past the barricade, and there's a fault on the map there, it shows a fault line where you can actually see it slipping. We have a control point that's just north of that. So you know, as you're coming up from the north, going south, you stop and you walk out, and you can see where that fault line is. That point that we have in the road there that we use for control has not moved. So it's been stable from that point. Everything that we've monitored, that we've been able to see, all those points, the centerline points that have been south of that, are the ones that you're seeing having moved down the hill.
So when you're up there, the points you're talking about, are they the holes in the ground?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, those were our centerline points that were once.
We said 2007.
Yeah.
And then the road department paid them all, and they had to pay them.
Would we do that?
Leanne.
To Pottle. To Pottle.
Anything else with squares? Otherwise, I'm going to turn it over to my consultant team. Thank you, Joe, for good briefing. Is that good enough for you guys to see? All right. Grant, I think there'll be another. Here, why don't we pull one more chair up?
You guys are going to be doing the majority of the
speech. Okay, so I'll start. All right. Ian, I'm going to squeeze in here because I'm really cautious.
Yeah. All right, well, I'm Ian McCann. I'm the project manager for OTAC, and I've been working with the county and ODOT and Federal Highways for about 9 months now on the study. It's been a really interesting project to date, and I just kind of want to summarize kind of the goal of this preliminary study that we've been working on. And so the team between OTAC and Cordforth Consultants, Cordforth has represented the geotechnical aspect of studying the landslide. So that was kind of the first piece of this. Was really to get an idea of the magnitude of the slide, the depth of the movement, the rate of movement. And so Chris is going to talk about that to start things off and along with the history. And then Grant with OTAC, he's a roadway engineer and specialist. And basically we looked at the extent that Chris gave us of it's moving from here to here. This is the area we need to avoid with a new alignment. So then we looked at several alternates to get around the slide. And so Grant will kind of talk about the
can you speak into the mic a little more, please?
Yeah, sorry. So Greg will talk about the three alignments and permutations of those alignments that we looked at. In addition, at the end, we'll look at a risk matrix that we put together that just kind of summarizes the risks of each alternative, and then a cost analysis of the various options as well. So from there, I'll turn it over to Chris.
Thanks, and good afternoon. Chris Carpenter with Cordforth Consultants. So as Ian said, we got involved early on with OTAC and we're looking at the landslide for the county. And the first thing we did was looked at all the data that Joe had collected, and it was very helpful to have that data to be able to look at where the slide was moving and then kind of take it from there and look downslope and upslope and then below ground with some borings to figure out what was going on. But first, what we did was we looked back at some of the historical information. And as Leanne alluded to, there's a historical document developed as part of a study for some slides in Portland that had some information on the Cape Mear slide from 1899. And what they found in 1899 was there was a period of a large amount of movement, you know, approximately 230 feet of movement in 1 month that occurred at the Cape Mear slide. And so this is kind of the right, you know, where the basalt cliff is right as you're getting to the cape. And I think what or what the report said was that it, there was a total of about 400 feet of movement, or 300, 400 feet of movement, but there was a period of time when it moved about 7 feet a day. So then, you know, then our history kind of goes silent for a long time, but then we get into the 1960s and a report by the Department of Geology for the state identified some coastal erosion. And so there's several things that are going on. You have the slide movement, and you also have the ocean eroding the bottom or the toe of the slide. In 1970, another report by the Department of Geology found that there was some slide movement that was starting to affect the road. It was fairly minimal at that time, but it was something that they made note of. Again, in 72, there's more movement that was observed by the Department of Geology at the beach, where they observed 30 feet of movement in the summer months, and then by the winter months, all that 30 feet had been eroded away by the ocean. And so is this cycle of the slide moving down the hill and the ocean eating away the toe that keeps the slide moving. So then we move to 99, and the slide has grown to impact the road more. The county elected to gravel the surface, and Stimson put in a shoe fly bypass. And at that time, it was a lock gate just used as an emergency. But then, you know, later on in 2006, things, you know, after a period of relative calm between 99 and 2006, the county elected to pave the road. And then 2 years later, more damage occurred, resulting in another study and having the Department of Geology come out and take a look at it. And based on their records, they saw 90 feet of movement since the road was constructed in the 1960s. And this is when the county elected to obtain the permanent easement and do the shoe fly detour that is out there right now. So then we move ahead again a few more years with relatively little damage to the road. But, you know, 4 years later in 2012, late 2012, there's another period of this large movement where damage is occurring. And this is when Leanne and the county decided to close down the road. And so as Joe was saying, you know, I have shown 9 feet of movement, but based on his records, it's more like 14 or 15 feet of movement since 2007, since the survey points were put in.
So is the word shoe fly, is that a technical term?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, you've
came
heard
from
of
the railroads, I think, but it's a detour around.
There's songs, you know, old songs that have that. I didn't know that was really a technical
term.
You
learn something new every day, Commissioner.
Yeah, I guess. I thought it was a bug.
So then this site plan just kind of shows the area that we concentrated our landslide study in. And so it's about a mile long stretch, basically extending from the exit off of Cape Mears Loop Road to the lighthouse on the south or west side to the survey points and the barrier that was placed prior at on the west or north side. So it's about a mile long segment there. We concentrated our study at the road. That's was what our concern was, but at the same time, we looked both upslope and downslope to identify what the effects are of the geology that is around us. So, based on our walking of the slopes and looking at the soil, looking at the trees, the ground conditions, we developed this map that identifies the different features of the slide. So as you, first I'll point out this red area right here. We've called this shallow earth flow portion of the slide. This is the area of the slide that is probably moving the fastest. It's the area that in the late 1800s had moved 300 feet. And so this is the area that's moving the fastest. Also, the area over here that is just in the vicinity of the water tank that is servicing Cape Mears, and then also from there extending up to the road is an area of pretty active movement. as I'll talk about in a little bit, there's instruments up here that have shown 8 to 12 inches of movement at depth below the ground. And the instruments that Joe was talking about, the survey hubs that he has been measuring, are kind of in this area. So this was the old alignment of the road, and then this is this shoe fly detour right here. The kind of larger yellow area is terrain that has shown evidence of movement in the past. It's not necessarily all active at this time. We have instruments along the road here that have shown movement. There's a bulge in the access road down below the water tank that kind of indicates to us that that's the extent of the movement currently. There did not appear to be signs of recent movement down here. Then the other line to point out is this dash line, and it's a little tough to see on this map, but this dash line is basically the outline of the landslide terrain that the Department of Geology and Mineral Industries currently has on their website as the limit of their mapped landslide terrain. And so that's a map that's available online that anybody can go look at it, and it covers the whole state of Oregon, but their mapped limits are along this line, and it extends and covers the area that we have mapped as well. The last thing to point out is over here on the side. These are fairly shallow slides that are occurring. As this material has moved out in the past, it's just undermined the side slopes here, and so these have just slumped in, and they're fairly shallow. The main area of concern are these two areas here and over here. And then I just wanted to show a few pictures of the conditions out there. This is at the current road alignment, and so you can see some of the offset. This was, you know, the pavement line right here, and you can see the faint fog line right here. So this is some of the amount of movement that has occurred, and then there's vertical offset and a lot of distress that has occurred in the recent past. This is just continuing to the west or south along the road, just some more evidences of the distress that the slide is causing in the pavement. There's about a 6-inch vertical crack or step in the road, and then also some separation. And then this is the old road that as late as 2008 was the access road, or the Cape Mary's Leap Road, and you can see the condition and the damage that has occurred in the last 6 years. This is directly downslope of the road, and so this is an area of highly active movement. This is probably 200 feet away from the existing road, and just in the year that we have been monitoring the slide, it has changed drastically. Every month we go out there and read instruments, we see changes in the slope. It's continuing to slough and move. And going down and looking near the water tank that is currently out there, there's much more distress down there. The water tank has had some distress, as well as the slope that goes down to Coleman Creek has a lot of trees down, and the ground has been moving. So that's near the mapped toe of the slide, or the bottom of the slide, that is actively moving.
Is the water tank still in service?
Yes.
He was up an hour ago.
I understand that they've reduced the water level in the tank as a safety precaution.
We're only a third full.
Yeah. And then this is upslope of the slide. So, you know, there's the evidence at the road and then downslope by the water tank, but then you go uphill from the slide, and this is up 600 feet from the road, and there's evidence of movement up there. And it may not be moving as actively as down at the road, but there it has recently moved, and there's distress up there.
So why would a person be wearing white pants out there?
Well, it's a geologist. they like to get dirtier than us engineers.
Would you point out, excuse me, where the lighthouse is? Go back to that map so you can find out where the lighthouse and the park is?
Yeah, so the lighthouse is out here on the Cape. It's just off of the map. The road out to the lighthouse is right in here. So this is kind of the turnoff.
Parking lot.
And the parking lot, yeah. The upper parking lot here.
Where is Cape Mirror?
Up here. Yeah. So as you're walking down the beach, you know, there's this point where it kind of juts out, and so there's a difference out here where this is a little more sandy and this is a little more rocky down the beach.
So that leads me to a question that I've heard, kind of a rumor mill question. Is Cape Mirror threatened? And the slide is further south of Cape Mirror, right? The majority of this massive failure.
So I had asked Chris Carpenter, after, you know, right after the Oso landslide in Washington, is this a possibility here? Uh-huh. And so, not to put you on the spot, but he did.
But go ahead.
Yeah. So the, you know, our main focus was up here, but you know, we did obviously walk down here just to see how things looked. And as I said, this is the area right here where we saw active movement. So kind of the extent here, and then also down here. Dogami has mapped the limit of their landslide terrain that kind of runs along this line and then goes out this way. Right now, based on just a walking reconnaissance, we didn't see evidence of movement in that area, but we didn't have a very fine, you know, our boots on the ground are not a very fine measurement of slide movement. Where we did put those fine instruments up here, we did see movement, but we also put them in areas where we were expecting to see movement. To answer Leanne's question about could this slide liquefy and flow like the slide up in Washington did, and it doesn't have evidence of this occurring, of that type of event occurring. There's evidence that, you know, it could move tens of feet a day, like it did in the late 1800s, but most of that movement was limited to this area over here, and a lot of that could be explained by the geology. The bedrock is dipping down in this direction, and so all the water funnels over to this direction and then is impounded by the basalt cliff here. And so it causes that material to become saturated and to flow out. So the slide over on these flanks has a low potential of flowing like that. It has less relief than there was up in Oso. But there is still potential for some debris flows to come down. You know, if there was a large release of water, say from a water tank or beaver dams that are upslope of the slide, you could wash material and debris down the Coleman Creek, you know, into Cape Mirror. But it's not likely that this material will liquefy and flow 1,000 feet like occurred up in Washington in a matter of seconds.
Good.
So just looking at the pictures again here. Then, so that was kind of the west, eastern or northern side of the slide. Looking at the western slide, just a couple pictures. This picture is from the road, looking at the road over here, and you can see a little pressure ridge and some offset displacement. You know, nothing near the amount of displacement that we saw over on this side. So this picture is taken right in here. But there's also a dip. And so this material, or this movement, is a little more muted over here. It's not as evident or as drastic as this material. And I'll kind of show you why that is in a minute. Then just looking at the bottom down by the beach, this material that continues to slide down into the ocean down here and is eroded away. We took these photos back in September or October, and then we had some more recent photos, and it was, you know, trees that were buried before, or logs that were buried before, are now exposed and just laying on the beach. And so it's an active erosion area and also active movement and sliding. So these are the four borings and instruments that we installed. We drilled holes that were about 6 inches in diameter, installed instruments to monitor the slide movement, and also the groundwater pressures, or the water that is in the slide mass, as those two things are very critical to determine the stability of the slides. The borings went down anywhere from 80 to 120, 130 feet. This was our deepest boring at 130 feet. This one was about 100, and both of these were about 80 feet deep. From that, and also from interpretation of the geology, we were able to develop cross sections of the slide, so a two-dimensional look at how the slide looks. And these are our sections. It's a little difficult to see, but basically, the road is up here. The slide plane extends down below the road and the ground out to the beach down here. And so the interpretation is that it's fairly deep at the roadway, at the section A, so this westerly or southerly section. And this boring showed movement down at 110 feet deep. And so that's part of the reason why the slide movement is a little more muted at the surface, is because it's moving really deep down. And so, and it's also moving less. It's moved about an inch in the last 4 months since we've been monitoring.
So deep-seated geological failure.
Right, right. Yes, yeah, so it's deep-seated, but then it transitions into this more shallow earth slide. And so the interpretation is that it extends up here with possible historic movement up another 1,000 feet from the road. And so it moving at a depth of 100 feet, kind of spreading out and transitioning into the earth flow. Then as you look over at the northern or eastern portion of the slide, where that detour shoe fly was, is the movement there is a little bit shallower. We picked up movement at depths of 30 feet and 60 feet. But then again, it kind of flattens out and transitions into a shallower slide, and then toes out, you know, just at Coleman Creek downslope of the water tank down there. These are a couple examples of the instrumentation that we put in. So this is from this boring that shows the depth of movement. So this is 100 feet, you know, these ticks are 20 foot intervals. So down at 100 feet, we picked up about 1 inch of movement. And then the material is kind of, there's intermediate places where it's sliding and moving, but the bottom of the slide is at 110 feet. And then it's just being distorted as it's moving down the hill. Then at this instrument, this one over here by the shoe fly, we picked up 4 inches of movement over the course of a month, from November to January. And so these instruments are limited in their capability. We basically put a 3-inch diameter pipe down the hole, and then we put a survey instrument. And once that pipe moves more than 2 to 4 inches, then we aren't able to monitor the instruments anymore. This instrument, we also put another instrument in, so we can continue to monitor it. But it told us what depth it was moving, but then it ran its useful course of life. Mm-hmm. So then the next thing we looked at, after we looked at made the interpretations, developed the cross sections, we started looking at what can we do to stabilize the slide or slow it down or improve the road so that there's less maintenance for the county to have to do. And that was the first thing we looked at is how can we, you know, given the size and the scope of the slide, you know, it's, you know, 3,000 feet wide and 5,000 feet long, how can we stabilize the slide economically or just make it, improve it enough that we can maintain it. And so the first option we looked at was a deep patch option. And this deep patch is basically layers of high strength fabric or geogrid that we layer below the pavement. So you excavate down 5 feet, put these layers sandwiched in between layers of rock, and it acts as a bridge. And so it improves the stability when you get cracks, the cracks won't propagate up to your pavement surface. They'll be masked by the layers of fabric, the high strength fabric. And so it's a good option when you're dealing with areas where you're getting, you know, fractions of an inch of movement, like we're seeing over here. You can put the solution in and it'll improve the performance of the road, but it won't stabilize the road. And over here where we're seeing, you know, anywhere from 4 inches, you know, it could potentially be up to a foot of movement in a month. The lifespan of that deep patch is somewhat limited. And so it's not a long-term solution. It's like putting a Band-Aid on something when you may need a tourniquet. But it would reduce the maintenance in a lot of these areas, but it's not a fix for the landslide. The next options we looked at were drainage measures. And so a big contributor to this instability of the slide is the water and the groundwater. You know, obviously we're in the North Oregon coast, which receives a high amount of rain, and that is a contributing factor to the slides. So there's several options as far as the drainage measures go. One that has worked effectively in the past, and that is horizontal drains. So basically these are shallow inclined holes that are drilled from a low point. They're 2 to 4 degrees off of horizontal, and you drill them up, intersect the bottom of the slide, and try to drain the water out. So it acts as a gravity feed measure. You don't have to pump. You just let the water drain out. And so we looked at, you know, a number of arrays of horizontal drains. We also looked at trench drains, which are basically you dig a trench 10, 15 feet down, fill it back up with a rock, you know, drain rock and a pipe to allow the water to flow out of there. So these options are beneficial in reducing or improving the stability of the slide, reducing the groundwater pressures on the slide. But over time, they require maintenance, and the benefit is limited to how much water is in the slide. So if there's 20 feet of water in the slide, you might be able to get 5 to 10 feet of that groundwater out of there by the horizontal drain. So you're not able to get it all out of it. And so there's limits on the amount of improvement that you can get with them. But they can slow down the slide and improve the performance. The next option we looked at were an earthwork type option like buttresses or shear keys. So a buttress is basically amount of material, rock fill or earth fill, that is put at the toe of a slide or the bottom of the slide that acts as a kind of a counterbalance. And so as the slide tries to push down, it holds that slide from moving any further. Like down at the beach down here, you know, this slide wants to move in. And if the ocean weren't there and if we weren't eroding, over time that slide would self-stabilize because it would build up a bunch of resistance down there. Because the ocean is there, it keeps eroding that away. It keeps eating away at the toe. The slide continues to move. And so we've looked at several places where we can try to put a buttress that wouldn't be washed away, that would stay there and act as a support for the slide. And so we identified a couple. There are some severe disadvantages with the buttress. One is we have identified areas that can help stabilize the road, but then there's consequences downstream or downslope of putting a large massive fill there. If we put something here, you know, what's it going to do to the stability downslope of the buttress? And that's something that is a challenge for an earthwork type option, is there's upstream and downstream consequences. If we put it way down here, down at the bottom, it would reduce the potential for a downslope slide, but then it may take years before the road even felt anything up at the top.
Big bugs too.
Yeah.
We'll present the cost estimates too. That's like the last slide.
And that is all I have right now on the geotechnical aspects of the landslide. Are there any questions right now?
So the only good news is Cape Mears is not going to be inundated.
There's a low potential. How about that?
Yeah, low potential. So that's the only good news.
The other part of the study that we had was not only looking at alternatives to slowing it down, but also alternatives of routes. So Grant's done a great job of trying to find alternative routes. So Grant, you're up.
So the first thing we did was look at a couple different options for where to go with the road. So the slide is right about here. And so as Chris showed, I mean, there's a big area in here that's all affected and sliding. So we looked for different options just to get around that. So get out of the effects of the slide. And as everyone knows, the topography out there is it's some pretty steep terrain and there's a lot of tree areas. So there's a lot of concerns with anything that you build out there. And so we just looked, and I know some of these are hard to see, but we looked at a couple of different permutations of option one that take us kind of up around here or stay out a little further over closer to the slide. And then we looked at two different ways to come down off of the hill. The biggest constraints we looked at was just grade of the roadway. So we maxed out at 12% grade. It's what you see on a couple of portions of 131 down here. And we tried to minimize any of the 25, 30, 35 mile an hour corners, try and get everything 35 mile an hour or above on this so that we don't have steep grades and sharp corners. And in addition to those, we also looked at what would it take to kind of go around this way. You know, there was get us closer to the evacuation route. We can use part of the roadway. If anyone's driven out there, there's some pretty good roadway bed out there. Can we use kind of what's out there and then come down through here? And then again, this was just a very good way to get kind of down off of the road once you got up to this point. And then the rock quarry is right here. So the typical section we used, you can see it's 26 foot, 2 foot shoulders around there, kind of a typical county section that you'll see on a lot of roads around there, asphalt and rock. And then that we just held this all the way through. I mean, we have some retaining walls where we need to. One of the big things that we found is anytime that we're kind of riding some of these ridges, there's big 2-to-1 slopes, which can be pretty problematic to build roadways on. So we had to look at some walls kind of on the uphill side and some walls on the downhill side. And so in our options, we kind of looked at working with the topography as much as possible to minimize the walls because walls are very expensive and then they add maintenance as well. So option 1A and 1B is where we kind of tried to stay as close to the slide as possible, just to minimize the length of the road. That was kind of the key component of this. The further you get up kind of to the north and the east, just adds miles to the road and more miles, more cost. So let's look at the lowest cost alternatives, kind of see where we can go.
And also there's the property, you want to show them the property. There's a private property owner that up in that north of that line, that's all private property. So we tried to also stay away from the private property.
And then, as I was saying before, we have the two different ways to kind of come down the road. One is over here, that's 1A, and then B kind of came down through here. The benefit to 1A is that it was a really nice grade kind of down, about 9.3% downhill, and then it got rid of a lot of the curves. But as you can see, there's some significant walls because it gets really steep. There's an existing drainage feature, a creek that runs down through here. It looks like it runs year round.
Those black lines are the walls. So the black dark line is the walls. And it has heights of walls, and you've got up to what, 20 foot high retaining walls?
Correct. And so the red is cut, the blue is fill, and then the black are the walls. And then these are where you would have something lower than a 35 mile an hour design speed on the corners. So you can see the difference between 1A and B is that you have a lot more curves through here, but you have very few walls. And so that's kind of the trade-off, is it's a little steeper through here and you have more curves, but your cost is reduced because you have a lot less walls and you're not building on as much 2-to-1 slopes. You're kind of working with the terrain to get down, balancing your cut and fills. So here's a quick profile. 1A, you can see it's about 9.3%. You start off pretty steep, and then the midsection's got some decent grades going through there. We kind of balance the cut and fill, and then you come down the hill, 9%. Like I said, not too many curves on this option. And then 1B is the one with the curves, and you have a lot more grade. But as I said before, you just don't have as many walls, so you kind of weigh in those two things.
So what's the average percent there?
There's a 12%.
Yeah,
right,
this
there
is 12, 7.5, 12. And so you just, at least 60 to 70% of it is up in the 11, 12 range. Okay. I mean, it's pretty steep up, steep down.
How many miles is that
represent? If you go back over here. So on this, you can see at the bottom, option 1A is 1.7 miles, and 1B is 2.06 miles.
And your takeoff point there, heading east, is about how far north of the current slide?
So the slide's right here. So you can see it's a couple thousand feet at most. There's an existing kind of Y driveway sort of thing up there. That's the takeoff point.
With two gates on it?
Correct.
So east is up in this kind of?
Yes. Correct.
Okay.
And then the point where you touch down, this one comes out right at the rock quarry. And then this one comes out right where the existing reverse curve is, just towards the lighthouse from the rock quarry.
So all these options so far, you still access the national.
Correct. Yeah. So everything we presented, you would still be able to access it. You just, you know, you'd have to go around this way and then come back and get up into the road.
Yeah.
That's where so show where the lighthouse is.
Yeah, right. Up around here.
Yeah, that's lighthouse.
The idea is you probably keep the road closed where
it's.
Yep. Yeah, so exactly. Where the road is currently closed, it would stay closed. Mm-hmm. And so instead of driving here and hitting the lighthouse, you would just go up around and then hit the lighthouse. So option 1C, as you can see, it's kind of an in-between of the two as far as mileage. And what this does is, as Leanne said, this gets up into one more private property up here. There's some benefits to the terrain up here, and it puts a little more distance away from the slide area that Chris went through describing.
But now we're on private property.
Correct. You're a big chunk up here in private property. And then the grades here are identical coming down the road. So this is the same kind of exit point, but you can see at the top of the hill, it's a pretty subtle grade up here.
So your grades for 1C and 1B are the same, pretty much similar going down.
Yeah, from this point down, they're identical.
Yeah.
It's just what you do with kind of the crest of the hill. And so the trade-off here is you get some flatter grades, but you go onto another private property. So then option 2 is where we looked at going kind of around
the private property, right?
Around the private property, correct. And then you're a lot further from the slide itself, but as you can see, it's 4.72 miles. There's a pretty steep climb in here with a couple of reverse curves, and that is a sheer product of just trying to get up this hill. I mean, this is, you'll see in the profile, it's a very big grade. Once you get around the property, down through here, this is the same point that you've seen before, and it comes out by the rock quarry, the same sort of place. The highlights of this is that you're a long way from the slide, you're off the property, and we've minimized the retaining walls on this end as much as possible. And then one more thing to point out on this is we also try and work where we can with the existing evacuation route, because there's a long chunk through about here that just had an existing kind of gravel bed. So the idea was, as we try to use that, widen it out a little bit where we could. So then the profile for this, you go along pretty good until you get to those reverse curves. And this is where you get some pretty steep grade. that's the whole side of that hill, you just got to get up. And so you're kind of stuck. We looked at a lot of different iterations of this one just to get up the hill. We were able to work with the topography pretty well through here. And then it comes on, this is when you're about halfway down the private property. And then this is the end of it. You come around the southeast end of the private property, and then you get on to the same ending that you've seen before. And then option three was, let's go kind of leave the whole area, I guess is what it is, and look at what it would take to come a lot further around. There's not a great scale with that. Go back to the main one. Let's look at three real quick. So I think this is the best one to see kind of what three is. So three follows the evacuation route, and this was merely a what can we do on the evacuation route, following it as it stands, and then kind of seeing where we can get down to serve Oceanside over here. And this was just due diligence to kind of go around and just evaluate all the options. This was a lower cost per mile, just looking at using as much of the existing roadway as we could.
And that was
six point eight. So that's option three. So thinking back to the map, you can kind of see we're following the existing road. And then we kind of veer off of the evacuation route and come back down here through the sanitary facility. And this one, it's got pretty decent grades that go through there. There's a couple of steeper sections in the middle, kind of where we were trying to climb the road before. And then you can see it evens out pretty good. The gravel road, if you've driven it out there, yeah, this is the steep route. Other than that, the grades work out for the most part pretty well. And then we flattened out a bunch of the curves just to make it more drivable. Little steeper down here towards the end before you come out. Coming down the last hill that's kind of above the facility. So the next thing we did is we looked at a lot of ways for projects. A good way to look at them is kind of analyzing your risk with each measure that you do for it. And so we tried to look at different categories that were the same between all projects, and then look at, okay, how does this fix rank? Does it have a low risk, medium risk, high risk? And I won't go through them all because it sounds like you guys can look at these on your own as well. But the categories we have is traveling public safety, life cycle risk, which is how long is the solution going to last and what are the costs associated with it, constructability concerns, how difficult is it, as I showed near the rock quarry, there's some 2-to-1 slopes, very difficult to build on, and then potential for community isolation. If Bay Ocean and 131 were to go down at the same time, you know, what is the risk to the communities to not have a good, viable route to get out? And just to give you an idea, on the traveling public safety, low is low slide deformation potential, not likely to cause hazardous driving conditions. Medium is potential for injury due to slow moving slide, creating some hazardous driving conditions. And then high is likely to cause injury. So that kind of gives you a sense of how we went up and ranked each of these. And so we looked at the no build, the deep patch, the horizontal drains that Chris was talking about, a buttress, and then the options that I just went over there. And you can kind of see how each one of them ranks for those. Are there any questions on this? That's a lot of information.
So it looks like 1D is the one that has low, 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 low.
Correct.
So you were saying 1B?
I think that's 1B.
You're correct.
Life cycle risk, yes. So I think that is, okay, yes. And I can make these matrices available if you guys are interested in them.
Yes, that was my question.
Yeah, oh, I'm sorry.
No, Pam.
Thank you. Actually, my question is something that you said before. This matrix was put up. It's just you keep referring to the private property, or are you just referring to that 320 acre piece? But isn't
yes.
all that timberland private, way owned timberland?
It's owned by Stimson, yes, and
still
I actually.
Private, isn't
it? It is still private,
you
so you're right.
Buy it,
yes, I've certainly had conversations with John Lee Hayes from Stimson. You know, Stimson is not in the business of getting rid of property, but there's some alternatives of acquiring the right of way, trading property with them. I mean, he's willing to work with us for community safety. I haven't had that conversation with the other private.
So it might be less expensive than the
you
price.
Still have to pay fair market price because it's going to be $7.
But would that be federal also? The price of the property, would that also be federal money?
Yes, so federal highways, because this leads to public lands, they are paying 100% of this project. But that leads to some other coming down. Do you want me to fill these right now?
Sure.
Bob?
A question on that, on the alternatives that went to the west of the 320 acre private piece. You're going to be crossing over Coleman Creek, which is the water source for Cape Mears. Coming up in the, we haven't got the water plant aligned yet, but it will be. Is that, are you planning on a bridge over Coleman Creek, a culvert?
The environmental issues on this project are significant. They may even require a total environmental impact statement. And we will spend years, there's seven endangered species in the flora or fauna. Dealing, we'll have fish passage issues, we got small cost estimates, which you haven't put up yet. I don't know if you want to, if we're ready to go to the cost estimates yet, but they include small culverts, large culverts, no bridges, right? But I mean, fish-bearing culverts.
We didn't evaluate any bridges. We went to 8-foot culverts that could pass the water that we saw out there.
I mean, there's places where there's a steep canyon in the creek that's, you know, 30
there's
feet down.
Several of those.
Correct. There were a number of fills that we had, about 30-foot fills over about an 8-foot culvert or dual 8-foot culverts.
So you are ready to go to the cost estimates?
You
want the sticker shop?
Sure.
All right. Ian, you want to present this or Grant?
I'll let you Grant do.
Okay.
Kind of tricky to read. Okay, these are, this one's pretty small, but I'll just read them off.
Small, but
you.
Large.
Small print, large cost. Just real quick, I mean, so these are different items that make up the cost estimate. It sounds like Leanne will make this available so you can read through it. At the bottom line, you have construction totals, right-of-way costs, preliminary engineering, and construction engineering. And what that does is that gives you a grand total. So this should be everything you need to get the project designed, bid, built, environmental permits, right-of-way, all that. So those are the grand total numbers. And across the top, we have deep patch, drainage, buttress, and those are the ones that Chris went over. And then we have 1A, B, C, 2, and 3. And those are the ones I just went over. So I'll just start over here. So deep patch is $2.42 million. I'm going to flip to mine.
Which would be categorized as good money after bad.
Oh, we're going to go into that because I...
Can you also talk about a time frame as long as off with a ballpark time frame with the cost?
Yes, as soon as we get through that, but I'm going to talk about our conversation in federal highways.
Okay, thank you.
And so just going down the list, then there's drainage options, and that is $14.5 million. And then there's the buttress option, which is $16.9 million. Option 1A, the roadway, is $17.1 million. 1B is $18.2 million. 1C is $15.2 million. 2 is $51.7 million. 3 is $54.1
million. So we met with Federal Highways and ODOT about 6 weeks ago. And we presented this to them, and
is that it? We need to throw lights back on.
Yeah, we can throw lights back on. That's it. Thank you, Joe. So we met with Federal Highways about 6 weeks ago, and I asked them. Of course, I have a recommendation. I want to share that with you right this second. And I asked Dustin Woods is our liaison with Federal Highway. I said, can you approve this? He says, I could, but I really need to talk to my superiors over making a decision this big. So I said, well, do you think you can make a decision in 2 weeks? And I'm going to schedule a board meeting several weeks out to give you enough time. I talked to Federal Highways last Thursday. And Chris actually had a conversation with them this morning. So I talked to Dustin on Thursday afternoon. And he says, you know, I support my idea. I am recommending option 1B. Federal Highway said that Dustin supports 1B, who is our federal liaison. His superiors only want to do the deep patch. I told him that I thought that $2.4 million on a deep patch was a waste of money, and that I'm not sure that the county should even accept that option because it doesn't reduce our risk to the traveling public significantly over a long period of time.
And it would take forever for it to have an effect.
And it would take, it would, well, the deep patch, you will actually, yeah. But I still.
But it'd be lower down and it would still take time for the upper end to settle into that.
The deep patch is just the digging out the road 5 feet and giving us some
okay. That's I was thinking the buttress.
It's just doing the same thing over again.
It's doing the same
thing. Yeah. Deep patch, Tim, yeah, it has that kind of contradictory meaning. You know?
Yeah.
Because you're only going like 5 feet and then they're going to put its liner on.
Yeah, it's kind of like the bridge over to nowhere.
So, you know, depending on where Federal Highways, so again, this is a lot of money for Federal Highways. And of course, Dustin really understands what I tried to. My biggest issues here are isolation of the communities of both Cape Mears and Oceanside and risk to the traveling public in the middle of the night during stormy weather, and this thing wants to drop a foot in the middle of the night and we have accidents up there. So I guess that's where my conversation was Thursday afternoon with Federal Highways. But Chris had a conversation with Dustin this morning. Can you tell them what Dustin said to you?
Yeah, so part of their funding process is to look at these different options. And if there's an option that provides a reasonable and practical solution that costs less or significantly less than the other options, they're obligated to go with that solution. And so what wasn't clear to them was that the deep patch option is not a mitigation, it's not a fix, it's something to help improve the performance, but it's, you know, 2 years down the road, maybe 6 months down the road, you're going to have the same problem again. And so that was what he needed to see or know, is that it's not a practical, not a feasible alternative to the other mitigations. It's kind of, you know, a way of throwing, like you said, good money after bad, but it, you know, it can help buy some improved performance in some of the areas, but in the areas where it's moving significantly, it's not going to fix anything. It's just going to be a band-aid.
So question, has Federal Highways seen this entire presentation?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And so there were some things that he needed, that Dustin wanted clarified, and that's something that we will address in our report, is that the deep patch is a maintenance option. It's not a mitigation, and it will likely fail, and it could fail within a matter of years, and then you're back to the cycle of maintaining and fixing and closing the road as necessary as movements occur, because it's not gonna improve things. And so that was the piece that he was missing to share with his superiors, that will hopefully allow us to kind of get away from the obligation to go that route because they perceive it as an alternative or an equal alternative when it's really not.
So talk about schedule, the first thing we need is for Federal Highways to approve one of our projects that's not the deep patch, because if it is that patch, we didn't even call it deep, 5 feet isn't deep here. I'm not sure it's a good use of our money, and I think that it continues to put us at risk from county government for our citizens. So that's the first thing. So really right now, we're waiting for Federal Highways to make a decision on what they're gonna do. Now as far as, so say Federal Highways comes.
Well, isn't Federal Highway Trust Fund going broke in August?
That's Federal High. That
that's a
this money
fund?
Is not the trust fund money.
Okay.
This is ER money, emergency relief money.
Good. That's good news.
It is good news. Of course, you know, there's not a lot of money at any level of government, as you all know, and we're asking for almost $18 million.
More than our whole bond for the roads.
It's the whole bond, and we're $1.85 million. But to me, again, it's the isolation of the communities of Cape Mears and Oceanside, and the rest of the traveling public. You know, if we could close this road, I mean, there are many roads that lead to communities that have just one road in and out. But this, you know, so again, I think that you might have some public comment in a minute. So right now, basically, we are in a waiting game for Federal Highways to get back to us. And so we're going to, again, continue these conversations. And so I'm hoping that Federal Highways will go with my option is 1B. That's the option that I'm going to recommend to you based on all the things that was presented to you. So.
And the cost for 1B was?
18.2.
Just chop. It's very expensive. So then we're talking about, you know, the environmental pieces.
Well, but before you go that.
Yes, sir.
Okay, so they go with the recommendation, 18.2. How much of that do they pay for?
All of it. This is because this project leads to federal lands. Generally, Federal Highways pays 90% and we pay 10%. So we would have to come up with $1.8 million. Mm-hmm. This leads to federal lands. Commissioner Labhart facilitated this conversation between us and Federal Highways. Is that leads to federal lands because there's a wildlife refuge up there and the lighthouse, it's all part of federal lands, that they will pay 100% of this.
Mm. What are the odds of them coming through?
I don't know. I was very disappointed on Thursday afternoon, quite frankly.
Well, we need to go political.
I knew you'd say that. I actually think that is something that I think the board should strongly consider.
Sure. Why not? That's our job.
So would you like to open it to public comment at all, or what would you like?
Sure. I think it'd be good to get the public comment.
Okay. Then we'll sit back while you do that. How's that? That
sounds good. So do we have any questions, comments?
That's a lot of information. But it certainly appears that 1B is feasible. Would, in this process, public comment have any, is there a way that public comment can have weight in this process?
You mean from Federal Highway standpoint?
Yeah, I'm making it.
What I think is that the community presents your public comment to the Board of County Commissioners, and the Board of County Commissioners takes that data or information from the public into whatever process that they move forward. Does that sound like how you would like to proceed? So
yeah.
I know there's been some prepared public comment.
Community input is always valuable, and community input will be taken by the board, but I think the board's pretty clear that we're going to fight for this and that we're going to move it ahead and we're going to go as politically as we can with our senators and Representative Fazio is on the transportation committee and speaks a lot, pretty powerful, and Commissioner Josie knows him better than probably most of us, but I mean we have very good relationships with Senator Wyden and Senator Berkeley and Congressman Schrader, so I mean we can do that, but it doesn't mean that you shouldn't be weighing in individually and as groups with your congressionals. Don't just say, well, we'll just give that to the commissioners and let them deal with it. I mean, everybody needs to, that they represent us. So that's their job, in my opinion. So.
And the other thing is, I think it's clear that we're not going to settle for a buttress or a deep patch. That's ridiculous. Why do that?
Is it better that the weigh-in that would come from community members would be from individuals or from a community association?
Both.
What's better? Are we talking about both or are we talking about individuals primarily?
Well, I 6 of 1, half a dozen of the other. I think if we hear from you, from the association, that's good enough, I think. Being individuals, I don't know if it's going to make much difference. You know, if we get a united message from the association, then we can say this is how our people feel, and this is what we want to push for. I think that's good enough. If you ask for individual, you know, that's going to be catch as catch can, and you don't know what the results are going to be.
So we can design pretty easily a survey that would go out to 200 people. Mm-hmm. And we could get the responses to 5, 10, 15, 20 items that would relate to these specific proposals. How granular are you looking for as far as comments?
I think we need to get it out, work with Leanne, get it as quickly as you can. What we're really looking at is, I think I speak for the other two, but don't count on that. But the first thing is that we don't want a short-term fix. It's good money after bad, you know, and that's not very granular. So that's just upper level looking at, look, let's get it fixed. We're going to have to spend the money to get it fixed, which means that there's no patch or buttress. And then number two, that you recommend going with the route that Leanne recommends, and then detail what that is and why, and you can work with Leanne to put that together. I think that's good enough.
How soon would you like to get feedback?
Chris, did you have an indication from Dustin what his schedule was?
I didn't give him that yet.
I would say the sooner the better. I would just offer, you know, emergency access, of course, safety concerns, if the other road fails. The other thing I think that's going to be really important to the federal government, and the reason they're paying 100%, is this accesses a federal facility and a state park. It accesses a national wildlife refuge, with U.S. Fish and Wildlife has already said up front that they're going to put several million dollars into promoting the Cape Mears Lighthouse and the facility there, and thousands of tourists visit that site every year. So it's not just a public safety issue for the community, it's also a federal wildlife facility, and that's a major selling point, I think, that's gonna help do this. So, and not one is more important than the other. Of course, safety is the highest priority, but that would be another talking point that I would use.
Pam?
I have a question and a comment. The question is, how long approximately might it take to do that option 1B? Do you think 5 years, 10 years to build a road that long?
So, right away is going to at least be a year and a half to negotiate right away. I would think the environment, you know, it depends. Are they going to require us to have an environmental impact statement, or are we going to be able to do a biological opinion or a biological assessment with a biological opinion from NIMS? So the EIS could take years. Quite literally 5 years. So we've talked about, you know, can we ratchet this down and do it through a different environmental process that would maybe only take a couple of years. So, I mean, we're 3 years out, don't you think? Would you guys realistically?
At least
3 years out.
So then my comment, thank you, would be, shouldn't that matrix then be reworked to show the long-term projected cost of the deep patch versus the long-term projected cost of the total picture instead of just
be able to do that
up front right now.
I mean, it depends how much it moves in the winter. And then that's going to be dependent on how much. This thing is really, when we get big rain events, that's when we're seeing it move.
Oh.
So we've had two relatively minor winters, or mild winters. We haven't seen a lot of movement, but yeah, I mean, it takes off and stops, and it's got mind controls.
Yeah.
Is there anything, Lanny, I guess, is there anything, Lanny, that can be done in the meantime, stop the rocks from falling down on Bayoge? Is there any temporary ways of taking care of that would be?
So let's talk about Bayoge. It is about, I don't even know, a couple hundred feet. It is almost a sheer basalt cliff.
Right.
And so we see movement on here every winter down these ravines.
Yeah.
I don't even know how, you know. I've had my guys up on top cutting some of these danger trees down. It's incredibly dangerous.
Yeah.
Big trees, but there's not a lot of room for them to run to get out of the way if the trees decide to do its own thing. You know, it's just a matter, I just can't see how you would mitigate. These aren't really deep-seated landslides. These are just slope failures of the shallow soil and through water.
So this road really isn't.
I
don't
know, Chris,
you're
Help me out here.
There are some fences, some high-strength fences that can catch rocks and debris. You know, one of the problems is, like Leanne said, it's a steep cliff, and so you don't really have room for it to put a fence because it'll just fall right over.
So,
but
now
you're
Bay Ocean, excuse me, sir. So Bay Ocean is really a high-risk road for people getting in and out of Cape Mears. Is that correct?
It is, as far as, you know, we are out there several times a year.
I know, but it's a high-risk road. Okay, thanks.
I would say the road is high-risk, yeah. I mean, but the geology in our region.
If you're driving it.
You just even go up Highway 101 up by, you know, the Jetty Fisheries by Nahant. I mean, that's even on 101. I mean, it's when you live in a geologic.
High-risk, I've been here since 2006, and there's been no automobile
damage is significant or less on that road that I'm aware of.
The geology is a high risk, but not the road.
Okay. The geology is a high risk, but it makes the road a high
risk. Okay, thank you.
Yes.
My name is Joanne Jennings, and I am the liaison for the Oceanside Neighborhood Association. And I have some written comments, which I'll present to you. But when you look at the population of Cape Mears and Neatarts and Oceanside, you're talking about 1,000 people. There are about 1,000 residences there. We have second homes. We pay taxes. But we're talking about fire, life, and safety. And I've had property down here since 1964, so I've been through a lot of this. Very important to look at fire, life, and safety. The fact that you've got 1,000 potential people out in that Oceanside area. Tillamook City has a population of 4,000. You're talking about 20% of a population within a radius of about 10 miles. You're talking about 5,000 plus people and families. So I think it's really important to look at that. The second thing is I'm looking at jobs. There's an opportunity for jobs in tourism, and the Tillamook Tourist Committee, or whatever it's called, is looking to brand and make Tillamook County more feasible for trips and tourism. That's an economic plus that will come into the county. And the last comment is, I would hope that you would include in your maps the lighthouse, because it's important for people to get orientation. I looked at that for quite a while and finally found the lighthouse. And if you don't embrace that, which is federal, private, community, county land, people don't quite get the picture. Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, I'm surprised that the Oceanside Neighborhood Association hasn't brought up one of the concerns that I've heard pretty strongly. You don't guess what it is?
The trucks.
Yeah, the commercial trucks coming down the hill, and they can't, I mean, it's difficult for them to use their brakes without using Jake brakes, and they're pop, 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 going through neighborhoods, and the commercial activity, it would be better if they went out the bypass road, rather than going through a narrow community of Neatarts and Oceanside, and so.
You can't disagree.
Yeah, okay, that's the one I hear a lot. So.
Cape Mears doesn't want them on Bay Ocean Road.
Yeah, I guess. Right.
Mark, behave yourself.
It's been pretty nice.
Yeah, it's been awfully nice not listening to the downhill.
So there's always a silver lining. You just have to look for it. Pam had her hand.
Yeah.
Oh, that, I was going to say exactly that. It's six of one and a half dozen of the other. It depends on who's more important, Oceansiders or Cape Mears.
You're all important.
Right. Okay. Yeah.
Okay. So, with that, I'm going to continue to have conversations with Federal Highways. So, what I think I can do is Jeanette's back there taking notes. So, if people want to give you her contact information, I can make this. I don't know if people want the whole PowerPoint or they just want the matrix and the cost estimates. Because I said I'd share that information, or what would be a better, unless we put it on our website and you can access it from that. So, I mean, would you, and I guess I would ask what people would prefer.
Never mind.
Accessing our website?
Yeah.
Okay.
So I want to make one comment before we're done. I think we owe a deep debt of gratitude to Leanne. This is such a big problem that I think your average public works director would just kick the can down the road and just not deal with it. This is a big, big issue, and she is taking it head on and is taking a lot of time. And so we all owe her for jumping in and working on this thing.
So when I find out the Federal Highways, I will let the board know, and then you can either let the communities know through a press release. But what would you like?
Let's not sit around and wait. I would recommend we draft a letter, and maybe we could have it for the board meeting tomorrow, and get it sent off immediately to fire the first shot across the bow. So.
Or a week from tomorrow, a little bit, Lance. We want to make sure we get it right.
Am I supposed to write this letter?
You want us to write it? Yeah. Well, there's. Not only that, it'll give you folks a chance to choreograph this. Give us a week, and then we get it done right.
We can wait another week.
Okay, so that's all I have for you today. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Brianne. And thank the survey department for their good works, too.
Thank you.
And engineers. So we will adjourn the meeting at 3:22.
Just time for our next meeting.
Hi, Heather.
Hi, Heather.